Daddy podcast. In case you haven't listened to the first episode, I'm Kirsten Schultz. I'm your host. And we talk about everything weird and creepy and spooky and random in Wisconsin. I really love true crime, and I was really kind of getting bummed that the only few things being covered in Wisconsin constantly are Ed Gein and Jeffrey Dahmer. And while both of their stories are interesting, there's so much more to Wisconsin. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for wanting to learn more about Wisconsin and random creepy shit. This week, I wanted to do one of the coolest places I have never been in the state, the Pfister Hotel Milwaukee. It is expensive enough to scare off the average person, i.e. me, and haunted enough to scare off even professional athletes. Located at 424 East Wisconsin Avenue, the Pfister Hotel opened in 1893. The hotel is ornate and beautiful, and it happens to house the largest Victorian art collection of any hotel in the world, which I guess I didn't assume any hotel housed much Victorian art, so that was a weird fact for me. I don't know. It's fancy. It costs about $1 million to build back in 1893. And just to give you a rough idea, in today's money, that's about $26 million. It's a lot. It's not just one of the most haunted places in Wisconsin. It's one of the most haunted places in the country and constantly makes top 10 lists or top 9 lists or random numbers. But it's constantly at the top of like spooky haunted hotel shit, which is kind of awesome. As the vision of businessman Guido Pfister and his son Charles, like I said, the hotel opened in 1893. Charles went forward with the plan, still really enthusiastic about it, after his father passed away in 1889. So they had been talking, had been, you know, getting things set in motion for the hotel to go and be built and get started. And all of a sudden, Guido dies. And Charles, you know, carries on, wants to make sure that their family name, you know, still gets represented and really kind of do this for pop kind of a thing, which is cool. It was designed by architect Henry C. Koch. K-O-C-H. Koch? Koch? I don't know. Koch? Whatever. There's too many pronunciations of that name. He also designed the Turner Hall, which is now Turner Ballroom, which is a concert venue in Milwaukee. Science Hall at the University of Wisconsin campus in Madison, as well as Milwaukee's City Hall. The Pfister had features uncommon in its time, such as fireproofing, electricity, and even thermostat controls. Like, this shit was fancy. It replaced the Newhall House, essentially, which had been destroyed in a fire in 1883, and that killed 90 people. But the Newhall House was like the hotel in the city. So once the Pfister came in, it became the hotel in the city. And it's constantly still where a number of professional sports teams stay when they're in town, where a lot of performing acts at, you know, nearby entertainment venues stay. So it's really a mainstay, a staple in Milwaukee, you know, 125 years later, which is really cool. The lobby is three stories, And so they really wanted to make it like a lush, opulent, glorious living room. There's touches of gold gilding, grand marble staircases that have bronze lions on them, like to greet people, like on the sides. It's ridiculous. There's, of course, paintings and all the fancy art. There's a fresco on the ceiling. Like, it's like the spooky-ass hotel should have been, an American Horror Story hotel. Like, it is fancy as fuck. Fuck fancy. The whole way that the art collection started was actually Charles wanted to share his personal art collection with the guests and really make that area feel like the fancy ass living room it is. And it kind of started from there. The original building, because there have been additions, which I will get to in a moment, but it was 8 stories. It's kind of this creamy or grayish limestone. There's Romanesque renewal architecture on the outside. There's granite columns. There's terracotta touches. And there's these giant bay windows. Giant. The original 200 rooms were built with high ceilings and decorated with 19th century decorations, as you might imagine. It really offered a number of cool services and conveniences within its walls, as a lot of like really fancy hotels tend to do. It housed things including restaurants, naturally, a barbershop, hair salon, a drugstore with a soda fountain, a men's lounge, a ladies' lounge, and the ballroom, which is, you know, available for rent for different things like weddings and other events at exorbitant prices, you know, has seen a number of really cool events, including a dinner for President William McKinley and his cabinet, which is kind of amazing. I don't think many people realize, like, how cool Wisconsin is. I mean, duh, that's why I'm doing this podcast, but, like, it's just one of those places that is always, you think of Milwaukee and that's what you think of. At least for people, I think, within the state who know about the Pfister and know about its significance in Milwaukee, that's what you think of. For me, I think of the Brewers, the Bucks, and the Pfister, so, which they all kind of go together, oddly enough. We'll get to that in a minute. So in the late 50s to early 60s, there was a real period of decline, just in general in Milwaukee. The economy kind of tanked a little bit, and fewer people were going to these really expensive, fancy places. So the hotel was purchased by Ben Marcus of Marcus Theaters, like, fame. And he wanted to bring the hotel back to its former glory because it also had kind of fallen into disrepair in some spots, and it wasn't as great as it once had been. Over several years, they, you know, did renovations across the hotel, but they also added some new things. So the first thing to do was a 23-story guest room tower. And it's kind of, if you're looking head on at the building, it's actually behind the original building, kind of like a circular tower, which is interesting. And that provided another 176 rooms. And there's also a parking garage with that. And this is all seamlessly added onto the old building. I kept seeing the word seamlessly added, like that phrase. And honestly, I get what they're going for. The color is the same. The style is not the same. I mean, it's like setting up a roll of paper towels behind your laptop and making sure they're the same color and being like, look, this was seamlessly added. Like, no. it's not the same. It is really clear that it's not the same. You know, the added tower really looks very 60s. I don't know. Anyway, to them, it was seamlessly added. That's where the fanciest things are, which to me doesn't make any sense because they should be in the old building, but there's rooms that feature English Regency furniture, oversized wooden beds with post headboards, swag drapes, framing bay windows, and red and white marble bathrooms. And just roll with the accents here. Currently, all of the hotel's rooms and suites have magnificent furnishings. I copied some of this stuff from their hotels.com page, so I'm not meaning to sound like an ad for them, but it's going to come off a little bit that way. There's 307 rooms currently. There are 82 suites, which have wet bars and sitting rooms. And wet bars, if you don't know what that is, if you've ever been in a larger hotel room and there's a little kitchenette kind of a thing where you've got like a little sink and a little like wine fridge, that's a wet bar. Not like swim up to a bar wet bar. Although that'd be kind of amazing in these suites. The Heritage Suites have separate baths and showers, vanities, beautiful bathrooms, and California king-size beds. The King Suites are in the historical section of the hotel, and those have two rooms, a parlor, and then the bedroom with a king bed. And in the pictures I was seeing, they are all like four-post beds, which is kind of fun. There's also usually like a pull-out sleeper sofa in the parlor room. The Tower King and Double Rooms are deluxe rooms, which have spectacular views of the city and Lake Michigan, because it is really in the heart of kind of downtown area. So you're really close to the lake, and that tower is pretty tall. So it's really easy to see the lake from those rooms. The Pfister Double Room is a deluxe room, which is located in the section of the hotel that was renovated in 2008, because there have been some ongoing renovations, but nothing quite as large as that one in the 60s from Ben Marcus. There's also a Governor Suite, which is a three-room suite. It includes a desk, a flat-screen TV, makeup mirrors, hair dryers, and other amenities. Visitors, kind of going back to that Victorian artwork, visitors can explore and learn about the art collection two ways. There's a self-guided tour, but the hotel, this is how you know it's fucking fancy, always has an artist in residence, and they will take you on a tour of the artwork. The hell? It's just blowing my mind. Over the years, of course, it's had many different fancy people, from dignitaries to musicians to actors to politicians, which I guess they're including in dignitaries, but I feel like there's not a lot of dignity there. It's the most historic hotel in Wisconsin. It's a member of the elite preferred hotels and resorts worldwide and Historic Hotels of America, which is a part of the program for the National Trust for Historic Preservation. It's also a perennial winner of the AAA Four Diamond Award. It's got like, it's one of those places that leaves chocolate on your pillows, and it has this little note on the chocolates. Because this hotel is a human institution to serve people and not solely a money-making organization, we hope that God will grant you peace and rest while you are under our roof. May the business that brought you our way prosper. May every call you make and every message you receive add to your joy. May this room and hotel be your second home.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, I get it, but also, like, we're in 2018, 2019 here. I don't know. It's just weird. Anyway, like I said, not here to be an advert for the hotel. So let's dive into hauntings. The Pfister is legendary for ghosts, ghost hunting, ghost stories. It was actually named one of America's most haunted historic hotels, which is real cool. The legend is that one of the ghosts that haunts the hotel is Charles Pfister. You may remember him as the kid that went ahead and was like, yeah, let's do it for Dad. Built the hotel. Guests and staff have seen him, they think. He's a good-natured, portly gent. Portly gent. Please someday, if/when I die, refer to me as a portly gent, because that would be amazing. He usually stands like around the fancy staircase or is walking around the lobby and kind of enjoying what he built, which is cool. He's also been seen walking around the galleries and looking at the art. There's also like a random note in here about that people like hear puppies. I would be so happy. Like, I love dogs so much. Every time I see any kind of animal, I either shout out what it is, like, puppies! Or, like, if I'm driving and I see a cow, I'll go, moos! Or I'll just start mooing at them. Like, it would frustrate me to no end to be in a place where I can hear puppies, but there's no puppies to be found. I'm sorry, that is torture. Aside from puppies, the Pfister is beyond infamous among sports teams, particularly in Major League Baseball. So much so that a number of players will pay their own way to stay in different hotels to avoid the Pfister altogether when their teams are in town to play the Brewers. Players in general have reported things like stomping footsteps, moving lights, the AC or TV turning on and off, and mysterious voices. I'll put a link to some of the most interesting and fun stories because there are a lot. But I also want to share some right now because holy shit. Adrian Beltre, who's now retired, said in an interview in Sports Illustrated, of all places, that he heard knocking in the hallway and on his door. So he went out to investigate, but found no one. Ooh. Later, he watched as the air conditioning and TV both were switching on and off by themselves. And he was like, ah, whatever, I'm gonna go to sleep. When he was sleeping, he was awakened by pounding noises from behind his headboard. He was so scared that he actually took his bat with him to bed for protection. And he was only able to sleep about 2 hours, he said, during his three-night stay. Carlos Gomez, former Brewer, now in the Tampa Bay Rays, also experienced something paranormal a day before a game. He heard disembodied voices and his iPod switched on by itself. It began vibrating wildly and just about fell down when he picked up the iPod to look at it to try to figure out what's wrong. It's like, eh, puts it back down on the table and it started doing the same thing again. I love Carlos Gomez. Oh God, he's so cool.
Brendan Ryan said in 2009 of his experience, it was like a moving light that kind of passed through the room, and the room got a bit chillier. Brewers manager Craig Council, Craigers, said 2 years ago that he heard former Pirates infielder Pedro Alvarez had experienced some weirdness at the hotel. And that matches up with a story told that year by Pirates manager Clint Hurdle, who didn't name names but said one of his players became spooked because a TV in his room turned on a couple times throughout the night. G-Man Choi, who's currently on the Tampa Bay Rays and playing with Carlos Gomez, which is awesome, had a spirit appear in his bed in 2016. Carlos Martinez of the Cardinals had a run-in with a ghost in mid-2018, too. This one made a lot more news because I think we're more down to talk about this shit now, it seems like. So what he said was after he saw an apparition in his room, he couldn't sleep alone. And he even took to Instagram to share his experience, which is probably part of why this blew up. So he has actually, like, an Instagram video where he's like, oh my god, there's a ghost! And I'll link to that in the show notes so you can take a look at it, because it's amazing. Colby Lewis apparently saw a skeletal apparition move across his hotel room around 1:30 a.m. It freaked him out so much that he talked with the team's chaplain as soon as possible and then missed, like, a press appearance the next day because he was too freaked out just trying to deal with it. One anonymous manager reported he had to calm down a player in the middle of the night to convince him that ghosts don't exist. While many players have fear over the hotel, there are actually a bunch that are like, yeah, bring it on. Rockies pitcher John Gray is one of those types of people. He's our peeps. And he actually conducted a paranormal investigation one of the times he was in town, which is really cool. I want to hang out with that dude. Seriously, that's the way to do it. You just got to embrace it. If you find nothing, then, like, you can calm yourself down and be like, hey, it's fine. No portly gents in my room. Portly gent. Some of the other things that people see or experience are phantom footsteps, both apparently of the human and puppy variety, floating orbs, phantom voices, electrical anomalies, object manipulations, and apparitions of portly gents. And apparently also of not poorly gents. So this is kind of a quick one because there's not really anything super scary about the Pfister. It's just haunted as fuck. And I'll put pictures of the outside. You can tell me if you agree with me or not that they do not, the two parts do not look seamlessly integrated whatsoever. I don't know. I really love downtown Milwaukee. In the last couple of years, it's seen a really nice resurgence of, good restaurants and good entertainment. I think one of the tricky things, though, is so much of that resurgence has come because of gentrification. And that's essentially when white people move in and start taking over neighborhoods. So if you've ever seen a Whole Foods go up in a place that was, quote, not a good neighborhood, unquote, and then, like, that neighborhood starts prospering and hipsters move in, that's gentrification. It happens so much here between Milwaukee and Madison and even some of the other larger cities in the state. It's actually happening right now over on the east side of Madison, where there's a number of buildings being put up, like new concert venues and new, like, luxury apartment buildings that then nobody can afford. And I think that's part of why you see it almost always tends to be like white hipster kids moving in because they have money somehow. At least enough money to live there because it's convenient and they can walk across the street to get groceries and whatever. I don't know. It's frustrating to me because there should be ways. We should be looking at ways to, you know, reignite parts of our cities without gentrifying them and without essentially resorting to racist white supremacist tactics to get there. Come for the knowledge about historical fun creepy shit in Wisconsin. Stay for the civics and justice lessons. If you're interested in learning more about gentrification, I will include a couple of notes or a couple of links in the show notes for you to do so. I hope you enjoyed the show. I think next I'm going to do the cryptids, a cryptid, the Hodag from Rhinelander. Yes, Rhinelander is a city. It's not like the Highlander, I promise. And I've kind of got a basic layout of some of the things I want to cover soon. I think after that I'll probably do a crime, like cover a crime, not commit a crime, because I wouldn't advertise that on any sort of media that I was going to commit a crime. The only crime I've done lately is I just ate Taco Bell before recording a podcast, which doesn't sound like a smart idea, does it? If you heard tummy gurgling, it was me. It's not you. It's fine. That's all for today's show. If you're wanting to find ways to get in touch with me, just search Spooky Scawny Podcast on social media. The Twitter handle is at Spooky Scawny, and then on Facebook and Instagram it's just Spooky Scawny Podcast. You can see fun pictures of my husband wearing a cow head, fake cow head, emphasis on fake. And if you have anything you want to send to me, you can do that at spookyscannypodcast@gmail.com. As long as it's, you know, electronic, don't try to put cookies in your email. Well, not edible cookies. Yeah, I think that's it. If you liked the show, please consider rating and subscribing. The ratings really help people find it. And it'd be kind of cool to, like, be fancy. Because I'd love being fancy. And hanging out with some of my favorite podcasty people would be amazing. Oh, a quick shout out. If you are looking for another podcast to listen to, you're just, like, so excited about learning about different places and you want to continue that and learn about whole different countries, check out Nothing Rhymes with Murder. It is one of my favorite podcasts. The hosts are hilarious. They're funny. They're British. So I love listening to them talk anyway. And each episode, they quote unquote travel to a different country and cover crimes in that country. Sometimes it's murder, sometimes it's not. But then they'll also give you hot spots that are like somewhat close to where their crimes occurred, so that if you should happen to be going to, I don't know, Ireland, then you could like check out a cool place near Belfast where this crime happened. Like, it's really like 50% crime, 25% amazing banter, and another 25% like travel show. It's basically my dream show. It's fine. It's the best. It's amazing. So if you're looking for another great podcast, check that one out. And thanks for listening. Have an awesome day and stay tuned for more creepy shit. You just listened to the Spooky Scanny Podcast. It's produced every 2 weeks by me, Kirsten Schultz. The intro-outro music is from Purple Plant. You can find show notes and more over at spookyscani.podbean.com, including a transcript in case you missed anything. Take a minute and rate and subscribe if you can. You'll help more people see the show by rating, and you won't miss a single episode if you subscribe. And that's pretty dope. You can support the show over at patreon.com/spookyscanipodcast, and you can email me anything you'd like me to know at spookyscanipodcast@gmail.com. In the meantime, sleep tight and don't let the badgers bite.